suffering not more than 50 miles away. Wait, 50 miles? How do you know that? I overheard the elders talking before you were picked up. I frown, considering this. Elder Knight is strong and healthy for her age, but I can't see her walking 50 miles. And when I first arrived, after they drugged me, they certainly didn't carry me 50 miles back. How did we travel? I asked my mom, but she told me she didn't remember. She was only allowed to go meet me if she agreed to be drugged too. The elders kept the location of Eden a closely guarded secret. I don't know whose fault it all is, Mira goes on. Is it Eco Pan's fault for interfering? Is it the government? The one thing I'm sure of is that it isn't the fault of the everyday citizens of Eden. They deserve better. I can't help thinking that if they were here, out in nature, away from all that concrete and artificiality, they would be peaceful, and equal, and happy. She sounds as enthusiastically hopeful as Lark. It makes my heart ache. Maybe, I say. I don't know, though. Eco Pan told me that every time people in Eden were left to do what they wanted, they went wrong. They started wars. They allowed social inequality. They messed Eden up, and Eco Pan had to interfere to fix everything. Yeah, but that's because they're prisoners. How can a prisoner ever behave normally? If they lived out here, there wouldn't be competition or social pressure. How can anyone hate out here in the wilderness? Her face is aglow with faith. If we manage to open up Eden and let everyone out, they could act like the real animals they're supposed to be. Animals don't hate each other or control each other. If the people of Eden could only be natural, they wouldn't mess up their society. I'm not sure if I agree with her. I feel a little guilty as I say. I hadn't really thought about getting everyone out. I was mostly thinking of the second children, and Ash, and Lark. Well, first things first, I guess. Once we get past the passage test, we can scheme and plan. She looks absolutely inspired now. If we can figure out how to get everyone out, it will be a miracle. I had an idea that maybe when we get word that Eco Pan has chosen someone else to be released to Harmonia, I can go with the elders, like Mom did. That was an exception, though, because Eco Pan told them you were family. They want you to forget all about Eden. They know letting you that close would just set you off again. They'd never let you go. No, with that one exception, only the elders are allowed to go meet newcomers. No, your best bet would be to get ranked first in the passage test. That's how people become elders. With some regret, we realize it is getting late, and we have to head back to Harmonia. When Mira has locked the garden door behind us, I say, "So, if I come first in the passage test, I'll be given access to information I need to get to Eden. Now that you're on my side, our chances of getting access have doubled. One or the other of us has to get first place." Coming in first place in your group isn't the same as being ranked number one. What do you mean? She goes on to explain to me that the participants are graded according to their performance in the trials, so that technically, someone comes first, second, third, and so on. But that's not what being placed in the first rank means. It's like getting a perfect score versus just getting the top score, she says. We aren't graded on a curve. To my surprise, I find out that even if I'm the best of this year's competitors, there's very little chance I'll be placed in the first rank and allowed to become an elder. It's theoretically possible that several of us could be put in the first rank, she says, but highly improbable. Most years no one gets in the first rank at all. I'd wondered about that, I say. I just figured all you had to do to be an elder was get old. But not all old people in Harmonia are elders. And not all elders are that old. The youngest is about 40, I think. Wait, so the last person to get the first rank was more than 20 years ago? I told you, it's rare. Carnelian did extremely well on his passage test, and he's only in the second rank. I gulp. My chances at finding out helpful information seem to have dwindled. Don't worry, she says as we walk back toward Harmonia. We'll come up with something. Just do as well as you can on the test, and we'll focus on getting to Eden after that. First things first. Mira and I part company at the edge of the village. After we change our clothes, we'll reunite for the Wolf Moon ceremony. In the meantime, I seek out our tree. I call Harmonia a village. It is more like a forest of tree houses, scattered widely through the woods. Only from the top floor can I see the bubble-like structures that surround other people's trees. It is strange after the tight-packed Eden to live in a place where most of the time I can't see my nearest neighbors. Yet it is familiar, too. In my childhood spent hidden away, I didn't see anyone but my family. It feels comfortable being just with my mom, particularly after our separation. At least now I am free to wander to the other treehouses to visit my friends, or to the more tightly clustered buildings at the center of Harmonia that surround the village green. I walk on the softly crunching oak leaves, and even though it has been 3 months, I still marvel. I thought I was doomed to a life of concrete beneath my feet. Actually, I thought I was just doomed, period. Everything about this place is a revelation, a celebration. I walk around in a kind of ecstasy, in awe at the complexities of the natural world. Here is our house, a clear glass-like structure built on and surrounding the trunk and high canopy of a stately oak tree. The house is virtually its own biosphere. We give the tree the carbon dioxide we exhale, the nutrients it needs. It, in turn, bestows on us oxygen and shelter. Every time I see our oak, I think of the camphor tree in the underground, which we once thought was the last surviving tree in the world, now burnt to a crisp. Really, there are billions of trees on the planet. The earth had been healed long ago, or was never as damaged as we were told in Eden. Yet in this green world, I still mourn the destruction of one camphor tree. Harmonia is about openness, about community, about living as one with the natural world. This is reflected in our dwellings. They're made of glass in part to remind us that none of us is separate from the others, that there is no such thing as secrecy. We are equal, and anyone who glances in any of the houses can see that no one has more than anyone else. A curtain shields our bathing and sanitary facilities from prying eyes, but beyond that, our lives are open books. I look up into our treehouse and see my mother on the second of the three stories. I pause in a clearing, and when she sees me, she runs down the spiral walkway that connects the levels of our house. The top floor is mine, the middle floor is hers, and the lowest level is for welcoming company. There are no dining or cooking facilities. All our meals are communal, another way in which we're like the people of the underground, the hidden second children who forge their own secret community. My mom greets me with a furious scowl. Rowan, you're late. Where were you? Do you know how worried I... She can't keep the angry act up for long, and we both break into a laugh at the same time as she pulls me into a hug. Our dynamic has totally changed since I came here. She used to devote all her energy to keeping me sheltered and safe. She was always paranoid that I'd do something to put myself or the family at risk. In her heart, though, all she ever wanted for me was freedom. Now, finally, she says she can give me the wings I need to soar. After the first few days, she started pushing me to explore my new world. She wanted me to have the experiences I was denied living as a secret member of society, hiding in our house all my life. Now she encourages me to go out, to run through the woods, to climb, to swim. No matter how dangerous it is, she doesn't seem to worry. Life is about risk, she tells me. Live life to its fullest. I love that the worry lines that perpetually marred her face in Eden have been erased. She's so happy here, even with what she's lost. She lives in the moment now, grateful for the things that remain. We sit together on a low log that has been sanded down to a comfortable perch. Are you excited about tonight? She asks. More nervous about tomorrow, I answer with a laugh. Mom is taking the test along with me. The test happens only once a year. The natural-born take it when they turn 17. Anyone from Eden takes it in the next cycle after they arrive. It seems strange to have a celebration the night before a test, I say. How can any of the new candidates enjoy themselves? I don't want to eat too much, and I really should go to bed with the sun. How else can I rank high enough to become an elder? Oh, sweetie, it doesn't matter what score you get. I know it's a matter of pride, but it's not really that important as long as you finish. And there isn't really any doubt that you'll do that. Why, someone told me that a few years ago a woman in her 70s took the passage test. Really? I ask, amazed. No one will tell me much about it, but it is rumored to be an extremely arduous test. I can't help but be worried. I've asked Carnelian over and over again what the test will involve, but even he, one of my best new friends, won't tell me any details. He won't even tell Mira. All we know is that we go out into the wilderness and, hopefully, come back. Carnelian says it is the way every citizen proves their devotion to the land, to nature, and fully shows their willingness to be a part of this world. Then I remember other things I've heard. But someone told me that people have died during the test. She swallows before answering. Yes, she drawls before breaking off and looking past me into the shadowed woods. And that it's mostly people who grew up inside Eden. But imagine what most of them are like. Soft, coddled people. And you're neither. They may have proven to Egopan that they have the mindset necessary to make a good member of society outside Eden, but life out here needs a dedicated body, an adaptive mind, as well as good intentions. It feels like just another Egopan test, I grouse. She opens her mouth to speak, then presses it closed again. We're not gonna have this argument again tonight, are we? I ask wearily. Mom was the one who gave me the journal written by Egopan's creator, Aaron Albaz. We both know that he was a maniac, however good he believed his intentions to be, who all but wiped out humanity to start the world anew. And Egopan was his creation. Mom is firmly of the opinion that the vast computer program called the Egopanopticon has transcended its creator. She thinks that humans might be corrupt, but the duty of the Egopan is to save the world. Humans included. She's had to struggle a lot with this, I know. But after I told her everything that happened to me since she was gone, and everything I discovered, she was more convinced than ever that Egopan is benevolent, and that it is only humans who ruin things. But I've been inside the center, at the mercy of the experiments they conduct in there. I had my identity taken from me. Egopan allowed that. Even if it was a human doing it. We are the computer program's toys and playthings. It's test subjects. It's slaves. Egopan is powerful enough to create a paradise. Instead, it made a prison. If it is a god, it is a heartless one. My mom realizes we shouldn't argue on this stressful, important night, and instead she leans her shoulder against mine reassuringly. Whatever you feel about Egopan, here in Harmonia, it is no longer an issue for you. Out here, we are free to govern ourselves. But your son is still in there. How can you... Rowan, she cautions. Do you have to wound me over and over? Don't you think I'd mourn his loss? But to drive myself insane dreaming of the impossible, I just can't do it, Rowan. He's lost to us. I sigh. We've had this conversation many times before. I modify my argument and say, but we still rely on some technology to make our homes, modify our crops, irrigate our fields, and dispose of our waste. We have power. It might be clean solar and wind power, but we still use technology. Yes, but that's... What? If there are computers and circuits and bots, what can it be but Egopan behind it all? We still haven't fully escaped. Hush. No, why won't you talk about this? As much as I've learned about Harmonia, there are still many nagging questions. Most important, are we really free out here? course we are, she says, and then smiles as someone approaches. Elder Knight. We don't have a president or king, but rather a council of elders who serenely and logically govern our peaceful village. I have seen Elder Knight mediate the most benign disputes. One person wanted to switch tree houses. Another petitioned to keep an orphaned baby squirrel she rescued for a pet. The move was granted after some negotiation that seemed to please both parties. However, the elder decided the squirrel had to be returned to the wild, although it might not survive, because our laws forbade keeping domestic animals. We cannot risk reviving the old ways where animals were treated as slaves, she said. Frankly, I don't see how keeping an adorable pet squirrel on your shoulder and feeding it hazelnuts would lead to animal slavery. We have no implants here. Natural-born outsiders never receive them, and newcomers from Eden have theirs disabled as soon as they're set free. Yet there is always something, or someone, controlling us. I still can't decide if that's a good thing. I know how people messed up the world once. And Ecopan told me how, generation after generation, people inside Eden created bad governments and hurtful policies that diminished freedom and peace. Ecopan let them, to a point, then orchestrated a societal reset, manipulating them through their implants so the whole city could start over. Yes, people can be bad. But shouldn't they be given the chance to be good, too? Don't rules keep people from freedom? And if they are free, maybe they could be even better than the rigid rulemakers expect them to be. These are big questions, and I bite them back as Elder Knight approaches. Hello, my children, she says, inclining her small, elegant head with its simple steel-gray coif. She must be nearly 80, but she is lovely. The few lines on her face, signs of character more than age. She always moves slowly, and at first I thought she must have some joint pain, but the more I watch her, the more I think she is simply as unruffled as a pond on a windless day. When she took the newcomers to the mountains to see the wolves, she hiked at a steady, unrelenting pace few could match. She seems like an admirable, formidable woman. Elder Knight, Mom says, making the sign of the seed in front of her. A clenched fist rising, with fingers gradually spreading out like sprouting new tendrils in spring. Come now, Rosalba, no need to cling to the old superstitions of Eden. I startle at the sound of my mother's name. Having spent almost all my life with only my brother, and my father typically absent, I've so rarely heard her called anything other than Mom. But she has such a beautiful name. It means white rose in some long-forgotten language of pre-fail earth. Here we don't have to worship the idea of the seed, the elder continues. Here in nature we instead devote our energies to actually nurturing those seeds. Forgive me, elder, my mom says meekly. Old habits die hard. But die they must if you wish to be a full member of Harmonia. What a joy it is to have a mother and daughter join us at the same time and test together. We are honored to be here and have the chance to prove ourselves. Elder Knight nods again in a friendly way and is turning to go when I blurt out a question. Why are we ranked in the test? She freezes mid-turn, and I feel my mom stiffen beside me. I mean, I completely understand why we take the test. I add, acknowledging that as a newcomer, I have to yield to this new way of doing things. But why will some people be ranked higher than others? I look around at Harmonia and everyone seems to be equal. There are no circles like in Eden, no rich and poor. Everyone is given an equal amount of food and resources. What does ranking matter? Elder Knight looks at me with a twinkle in her eyes and extends her left hand, palm up. On one hand, it doesn't matter at all, my child. We are all animals here, humble and equal parts of the ecosystem. But on the other hand, she holds up her right hand and points to the glow that emanates from our treehouse as dusk is falling. For Harmonia to survive, some of us have to be a little bit more than animals, if you see what I mean. I think I do, I reply. You mean some people are allowed access to the technology that helps us lead simple lives with minimal impact on the environment? She nods. And that allows most of our citizens to live as much apart from technology as possible. You are quick-witted, Rowan, an asset to the community. But speak of it no more. If you rank high in the test, you will be burdened with certain responsibilities. Nothing onerous, and you can rest easy knowing you are helping Harmonia survive. If you pass but don't do so well, no matter, your life will be just as happy here. She spreads her hands wide to encompass the slowly darkening forest we live in. We are at home in the earth where we belong. Her face is blissful. What more could any of us want? She glides away, her lean, elegant body moving with ease over the rough terrain of roots and rocks. Mom slaps her hands on her thighs and stands up. Now, you better get ready, young lady. The Wolf Moon Festival starts in a couple of hours. Your clothes are a dirty mess, and frankly, you could do with a shower. She fans the air in front of her nose, and I giggle. I'm going to go help set up the feast for tonight. I put out the pale green linen tunic for you, the one with the hummingbirds embroidered on it. That will look pretty for tonight. She kisses me, tells me she'll see me at the festival, and heads toward the center of our village. I take a long shower, relaxing as the hot water soothes my muscles. This exemplifies the strange dichotomy of life in Harmonia. On one hand, this is natural spring water, as pure as can be. The soap is infused with flowers, pale lavender blossoms that remind me of lark's hair, and dark petals of verbena, so that my shower smells almost as good as Mira's secret garden. And yet, contrasted against all that naturalness, is the hot water itself. We're supposed to live as much like animals as possible, but animals don't get hot water. Unobtrusive solar cells give us electricity, hot water, refrigeration. Though we grow some of our own food, we also have things like grain, bread, tea, and olive oil that we don't grow here. They are made somewhere else, and it can't be close, or I would have found it on my explorations. Who grows them, who moves them, and how, I don't know. But I have my suspicion. I think there are bots growing our crops, making the extra things we need. And a transportation system to bring the food to us. It's also frustrating, because I feel like if I knew more about all this, it might help me get to Eden and free my friends. But there's no way to learn more until I get through the passage test. And even then, I might not be deemed worthy of privileged information like that. I dry off and slip into the outfit Mom picked out for me. The flowing tunic has two layers, a sheer, gauzy, embroidered pale green over a darker green. Together they flow beautifully, making the ruby and emerald-colored hummingbirds stitched into the gauze seem to flit over summer foliage. It's new, and so lovely I'm almost afraid to wear it for fear of getting it dirty. Well, it should be safe tonight. Tomorrow morning I'll put on something old and practical that can withstand the rigors of the test. The color and embroidery are the kind of things that Lark would like, and I wish she was here to tell me I look pretty in it, or so I could let her borrow it. I blush at the thought. If the world were different, we could live like that. A peaceful, placid world of sharing and laughter. She could have that here. I smooth down the flowing layers of my tunic and leave the cloistered private area that blocks a small portion of the glass house from the rest of the world. Now I'm out on display, as we all are at almost every moment of the day. The neighboring houses look like giant crystal confections, brightly reflecting the sinking sun. I can see dim shapes moving in the nearest ones, and I smile as I comb my wet hair, thinking of the happy families that never have to worry about being monitored or having any family member taken away. Then a movement below my house catches my eye. Is it Mom coming back? No, I realize, peering closer. It's Xander. He lounges against a tree and looks up at me insolently. His stare doesn't waver. Even from up here, I can see the malicious smirk on his face. In that moment, all the rage I felt when he insulted me and my mom earlier today surges up in me again. There were people around us before, and they stopped us. But no one is here to stop me now. I don't care what the consequences are. I'm going to confront him. Maybe to yell at him. Maybe to force him to tell me why he hates me so much. Maybe to beat him senseless. I slam the comb down and run down the stairs after him. By the time I get down, he's gone. I catch a glimpse of him walking into the thicker woods and sprint after him, my fists clenched in determination. Xander is going to answer for the hateful things he's said and done. Four. I'm so eager to confront Xander that I never see his two brothers. They are younger than him, one 16, the other 14, but they are close to his height and bulk. One of them tackles me from the side as I run, slamming into me with such force that I smack into the earth. I struggle, but he holds my legs while another one digs his knee into my belly. When I open my mouth to scream, he shoves a ball of moss into my mouth and clamps his hand over it. I try to fight, try to roll to my side, spit it out, bite him, but the moss is choking me, and the only way I can breathe is to lie still and breathe through my nose. I'm pinned down and helpless. Then Xander saunters up.
"Well, well, well, what do we have here, my brothers?" he drawls. "A piece of garbage fouling this beautiful earth. Stinking city scum."
He kneels next to me, exchanging an amused look with his siblings. Then he spits in my face. I close my eyes just in time, but I can feel the disgusting slime sliding down my face. I'm almost glad for it. The rage that comes over me overwhelms everything else. If not for the fury, I'd be terrified.
"I'm going to explain something to you," Xander says. "I'll use small words to make sure you understand."
His brothers laugh.
"Tomorrow, you're going to fail every test."
I think he's insulting me, and I squirm against my captors, shaking my head no, and at the same time wiping most of his spittle onto my shoulder. Then he goes on, and I realize what he means.
"You're going to fail on purpose. If you don't, very bad things will happen to you."
He leans his face very close to mine.
"The elders favor people who Ecopen released. They think you must be something extra special to be picked out of a million people. They always grade the Eden scum easier than the natural born. I intend to get the first rank, city trash. I'm going to show the elders exactly how superior the natural born are. When I'm an elder, things will be different around here."
I make an inarticulate grunting sound of rage.
"Oh, I know what you're thinking," he says. "You're thinking that just because you fail miserably, it won't necessarily mean that I get ranked in the first tier. And you're right."
He closes the remaining small distance to whisper in my ear.
"Mostly I'm doing this because I don't like you."
He chuckles, and I shiver as his hot breath touches my ear. I slam my head into his nose, and he falls on his backside as a red spray covers half his face.
"You stinking little—"
he calls me the most disgusting names. My satisfaction is short-lived. The next instant, he's pulling my head back by my hair and screaming at me. He cocks back a fist, but his brother stops him, saying something about being too obvious. The elders will know. He manages to get control of himself.
"You're going to fail tomorrow, understand?"
I shake my head no. He smiles, which I know is a bad sign.
"Oh, I was hoping you would say that."
He holds my hand, almost tenderly. Then he gives my pinky a vicious sideways jerk. I hear a sickening crack, feel an agonizing stab of pain that seems to travel up my arm and settle in my belly. The moss muffles my screams.
"Are you gonna fail tomorrow?"
he asks, taking hold of my next finger. I shake my head, though tears are streaming down my cheeks. He looks at his brother.
See, I told you Eden's scum is stupid. Without even looking at me, he breaks that finger too, closing his eyes in bliss at the loud crack of bone snapping. We can do this 10 times. Pretty soon it won't matter whether you agree or not. You won't be able to take the test with all your fingers broken. I need to take it, to be accepted here, to have access to information I might need to free my friends. Reluctantly, I realize that I have to play along. It might hurt my pride to give in, but it will hurt my fingers far worse if I don't. I nod. What's that? He asks, moving on to the middle finger. I can't understand you. I nod more frantically, trying to say a yes through the moss. Good girl, he says, patting my head. I thought you'd listen to reason. I'm just glad it took you a while. Now I know you're thinking as soon as we let you up, you'll run right to Elder Knight and tell her what happened. But remember, we can find you any time. And accidents do happen. A lot can kill you out here. And if you don't care about your own safety, think of your mom. If you tell anyone about this, I'll... He leans in to whisper again. The most filthy things. And this time, I don't dare to try to retaliate. The three brothers run off, and when they're gone, I spit out the moss, choking and retching. Then I hug my injured hand carefully to my belly, rocking, feeling in shock. This is supposed to be a peaceful paradise. For a while, I'm too shaken to walk. Finally, I drag myself to my feet and walk in a daze back toward the heart of Harmonia, cradling my injured hand. I can't go to Mom. She'd know right away that something is wrong. Part of me wants to scream to the entire village what just happened. They'd have to believe me, right? My broken fingers, his broken nose, the dirt and tears. There's ample evidence. But I haven't heard of any kind of punishment system here. It really isn't needed. What would happen to him so that I'd be safe? He wouldn't be imprisoned or banished. He's right. He can find me or my mom any time he likes. And in a world that's supposed to be without crime, with hardly any laws, what's to stop him? I never thought I'd say this, but what I wouldn't give for a green shirt and a couple of security bots right now. I realize with a start that too much peace and harmony can have its own dangers in a civilization. All it would take is a few more like Xander and his kin to turn this from a placid, egalitarian society into a violent dictatorship where might makes right. Maybe a society needs prisons and punishment. For now, though, I need to pretend that everything is okay. I'll put in an appearance at the Wolfmoon ceremony, go to bed early, and then do my best on the trials. I'll face whatever consequences come later. If I didn't have any intention of telling Mira or anyone else, I probably should have looked in a mirror before going back to the village. At first, they didn't notice. Mira and Carnelian are sitting near a bonfire, so I join them. The flickering firelight dances over me, and I try to make normal conversation, holding my throbbing hand in my lap. Do you know, there was really no such thing as a fire inside of Eden, I tell them. We didn't have much that could burn. Everything was man-made. No wood, of course. And it was made to be fire-resistant and safe. I chuckle. Couldn't risk a big fire in a closed system. It's still so remarkable to me to see real logs burning. Oh, they're not real logs, Rowan, Carnelian says. Mira snorts. Do you really think we'd sully the earth with ash and carbon monoxide and all the garbage that comes with burning wood? That we'd chop down trees just to see the pretty fire? Abashed, I scowl at not having figured that out myself. I don't take the slightest offense at Mira's directness. That's just her way. She might be a little bit abrasive, but she's already proven herself to be a caring, loyal friend. What are they burning, then? I ask. Totally synthetic, Carnelian explains. They bring them in from... he breaks off, biting his lip. From where? I press. I'm not supposed to talk about it, he says, looking away. I roll my eyes. You know how I love secrets. Mira nudges me with a laugh, and I manage not to wince as she jars my injured hand. You don't think I've tried to make him talk? And I have methods you never even dreamed of. You'll find it all out after the passage test, Carnelian says with confidence. I'm sure the two of you will come out in the first or second tier. There are about a dozen participants this year, a bigger than normal group, and you two easily outclass most of them. After your rank, you'll know everything I know, more or less. Believe me, it isn't that interesting. Just maintenance stuff for me so far. Mira's a nature lover like me, always wanting to be running in the woods like a deer, studying animals, climbing things. Carnelian, on the other hand, is completely into tech. He always begs for me to tell him about all the innovations in Eden. Carnelian goes on. I can't wait until I've progressed far enough that they let me get my hands on the coding, or ride the hypertubes to other facilities. My heart is thudding hard at what Carnelian just said. Hypertube access? Other facilities? That must be how they get to distant Eden so fast. And I knew there must be places besides Eden and Harmonia, and Carnelian just confirmed it. But I don't dare ask any direct questions. For one, if I do, it will remind him that he said too much, and he'll be more careful next time. For another, I don't want to give him a clue to what I'm planning. Later, I'll ask Mira not to tell him, though I'm guessing she assumes that anyway. I don't think he'd like the idea of her helping me with my foolhardy plan. The more I learn, the more seems to fall into place. It's nothing like a plan yet, but I feel closer than ever before. You look lost in thought, Mira says. But I know what you're thinking about. She shares a conspiratorial wink. No, I'm just... I begin, and turn to face her. The fire illuminates my face fully for a moment, and Mira gasps. What happened to you? Nothing, I fell down. Yeah, right. Your tunic is torn, and is that blood? Carnelian notices and peers at me too. It's not mine, I say. Like that makes it any less of a story? She says with a snort. But I can tell she's really concerned. What happened? Your hand is hurt, practical Carnelian says. I try to hide it, but he takes it carefully in his and starts talking about how to set the bones, the best way to bind the fingers to each other for proper healing, exercises to do to maintain mobility after they mend. Yes, Carnelian, that's fascinating, Mira finally interrupts. But what we should be talking about is exactly how this happened. She glares at me. And don't you dare tell me again that you fell down. I don't want to talk about it. It's better if I just take care of him myself. Him? Who would dare... Oh, Xander? I don't want to confess, but she reads me perfectly. I'll kill that bicking... Ugh! She seethes. We need to go to the elders. But when I tell her why I'm against the idea... She reluctantly agrees. Then we need to teach him a lesson ourselves. Between the two of us, we can take him on. Her hands are balled into fists. I don't know about that. He's a big guy, strong from a lifetime of hard outdoor work. He makes the residents of Eden seem soft by comparison. Please, just go along with me on this, guys. We can figure out what to do after the passage test. I think if I tell anyone, I'll just make things worse right now. She can see things my way, though I can tell she's itching to take action. Even Carnelian argues for telling the elders, but he respects my wishes. Just don't let your mom find out, he says. You know no force on earth would keep her from telling the elders, or more likely beating up Xander herself. Then help me act normal by having fun tonight. I say, forcing a smile. For now, I need to try to put Xander's attack out of my head. Tomorrow, though, I'll be alert for more treachery. Carnelian won't let me go without getting me a cup of herbal tea he swears will lessen the pain. It tastes bitter and strange, but a few minutes later the agony has subsided to a dull ache. All the lights of Eden's finest entertainment circle can't compare with the warm dancing glow of a bonfire out under the stars. The fire crackles, and if the logs aren't made of wood, well, I can't imagine anything more realistic. Somewhere a reed pipe is playing a haunting melody. Elsewhere, someone sings. Closer to the fire, a group of people beat drums in a complicated rhythm. Most of the villagers are dancing on the close-cropped grass. I try to remember the happy crowds I saw on my first night of freedom. Neon colors, garish lights, gaudy clothes, smiles so huge they couldn't be real. Everything in Eden was fake. Maybe even the emotions. After all, with Ecopan having its electronic finger in everyone's brain, how could anyone know what they really felt? Maybe all that fun of the elites of Eden was an illusion. Here, though, I believe that people are truly happy. They don't have half as many possessions as the people in Eden, but what they have is real, including their emotions. Mira rises to dance, pulling Carnelian along behind her. He slouches and stomps with no sense of rhythm, and I have a feeling he'd rather be sitting somewhere talking instead of dancing. But I also see the glow in his eyes when he looks at Mira, and I realize that making her happy is what makes him happy. "Join us?" Mira asks. "I like watching," I say. "You're not stuck behind a wall anymore, Rowan. You have the whole world. You might as well be dancing in it." She's right, but it's still hard to escape that feeling of isolation and separation imbued into my childhood. "You need some time alone, without me hanging on," I say. She looks quickly serious. "Rowan, don't ever think that. There's enough love and friendship for everyone." Then her eyes crinkle in laughter. "Besides, we wouldn't be such a good couple if we didn't have other people to distract us from each other." She winks at Carnelian, then looks back at me. "We can't fight in front of you." I know she's kidding. Different as they are, she active, abrasive, and fiery, he calm and introspective and logical. They still seem to be a perfect match. I like being with them, just to watch their happiness. The way they tease each other, the undertones of affection behind every word. They give me hope. As I watch them dance, subtle memories of Yarrow come to the fore, and I realize that she has memories. False, implanted memories of a lifetime of dancing and socializing. I let her take over, and she makes me join the other dancers. I show my friends some of the popular dances of Eden, and they laugh at them. But before long, I see them being copied by people all over the village green. I don't like to let Yarrow out too often. I lost myself in her for so long that I worry she might take over again. But sometimes, she can be a useful ally. Night deepens, and I pull Mira aside and say, "Shouldn't we call it a day? We have to get up early, and who knows what's in store for us tomorrow." She shakes her head, and the movement turns into a sway, then a shimmy of her irrepressible body. She can't help dancing, moving. In the woods, she runs as fast as me, and is an even better tree climber, though I'm better at rocky walls. Lately, she's been teaching me a series of tumbling exercises she's mastered, and though my body still doesn't feel like it's obeying me, I can do basic flips and handsprings now. "Tonight we live, for tomorrow we may die," she says merrily. But her words make me shiver. I wish I knew what we would face tomorrow. Every year has different tests, so Carnelian couldn't tell us much anyway. But he could give us an idea. If only he wasn't sworn to secrecy, or his ethical standards were looser. "Besides, you have to stay for the presentation. Look, it's starting." 5. The revelries have calmed, as if by mutual agreement, though I heard no signal. The full moon has risen directly overhead. Drawn by the sudden movement of the villagers, I follow toward a dais at the edge of the village green. Elder Knight mounts the stage. She picks her way carefully, deliberately up the steep stairs, but needs no assistance. With a sense of utter calm, she paces to the center of the stage and waits for quiet. "Another wolf moon has come," she intones, and though she doesn't shout, her voice is easily heard even where I am at the back of the crowd. "And we celebrate the benevolence of the earth that has allowed us to be part of nature, not separate from it. Every year when the full moon rises red in the sky, we come together and remember the sins of our ancestors, the crimes of our species, and we renew our solemn vows to never fall into the same trap as they did. May this bloody moon remind us of our blood deeds, so that we may never repeat them. May it remind us of the wounds the earth has suffered because of us, so that we may heal them." She flings up one arm, the sleeve of her linen gown falling back to reveal lean muscle and sinew as she points at the huge russet moon. They call it a blood moon, but I have seen blood in its every variety, flowing and freshly spilled crimson, slick and vital, as well as the blood of old wounds, dried and rusty. No, the moon is not quite like blood. It's more like blushing bone, a ghostly, ominous red. A bloodshot eye looking down on us. Elder Knight steps to the side of the stage, and new figures mount. For a moment, they look perfectly normal to me, and I can't figure out why a frisson of nervous laughter runs through the gathering. Then I realize they are dressed like people of Eden, in loud colors and synthetic fabrics. The clothes don't flow like our soft linen garments do here in Harmonia. Instead, they have odd angles, features without function, stiffness and creases. The essence of Yarrow that remains in me looks on them with approval. "Last season's fashion," she murmurs in my head, but she admires the tight-bone bodice, the square lampshade skirt, the fairy lights imbued in the fabric that make it seem even more alive than the wearer. "Not bad," fashion-conscious Yarrow thinks from her refuge in my head. I stroke the thin, comfortable wrinkles of my linen tunic, pale green, dyed with lichen, and think how lucky I am not to have to wear plastics against my skin. Seeing those actors pretending to be in Eden makes my heart ache with a painful mixture of mourning and hope. Realistically, I know that some or all of them are back in prison, or dead, or worse. Which would be worse, really? I know the chief wants to have second children for her mind-altering experiments. They never felt the interfering touch of lens implants, were never meddled with by the Ecopan. And Eden's head of intelligence came up with unique and torturous ways to alter a person's very identity, to give them new memories. Or even, as she did with poor manipulated Pearl, to wipe them completely clean. I'd almost rather Lark and the others were dead than tied down with wires probing their brains, stripped of their true selves. And Lachlan, where is he? I always think about him before I fall asleep. I think about the night I spent in his bed, chaste but so intimate. I think about the way he's saved me, the way I've saved him. We fought side by side. Every night as I look out through the glass that barely separates my bed from the natural world, I imagine laying in his arms, safe. But every morning when I wake up, the first person I think of is Lark. The joy of her smile. The wonder of her kiss. And the rest of the day, whenever my mind wanders from agriculture demonstrations, natural history classes, and the 100 tasks and lessons I have to get through to catch up to the natural born, I think about Ash, my twin brother, my other half. Once, my love had been mixed with resentment that he had been firstborn, condemning me to the life of an illegal second child, always hidden, always in danger. But after I found out that I was really the firstborn, that he had taken my place because he could never survive his debilitating lung condition without extensive medical care, I was proud that I had been able to sacrifice myself to save him. Later, I learned that his lung injury had been caused by our own father when he tried to solve the problem of twins by aborting one of us. He chose Ash to live, but accidentally hurt his unborn son, while unwanted, I was born healthy and whole. I told my mom how my dad tried to redeem himself by saving the imprisoned second children. I don't know if she forgives him. I don't even know if I do. What does it matter, though? We'll never see him again. If against all hope I manage to break back into Eden, and even more improbably break out again, it certainly won't be to rescue him. I shake my head and try to focus on the Wolf Moon ceremony. The actors put on a pantomime of high living and excess. One mimes driving a car that belches out acrid fumes, while another has a little device that seems to let her inhale toxic smoke directly into her own lungs. People around me shake their heads at the stupidity of our forebears. "Look upon what we once were," Elder Knight proclaims. "We are still humans now, but we are a different kind of animal than our ancestors. Different primarily because they forgot that they were indeed animals. In the pride of their species, thinking that their great brains and opposable thumbs marked them out for a special destiny, they disregarded the natural laws, the proper harmonies that govern nature. They set themselves above the earth, so high above that when their fall came, it was catastrophic. In an instant, the mummers rend their bright clothes, tearing them off to reveal sickly gray rags. Some unseen stagehand unveils a red lantern that casts a molten glow over the actors. They pull ashes from their pockets and scatter them high so they rain in a downpour, then swirl with each frantic dancing step the actors take. Thinking they had become gods, thinking technology would be their salvation, humans thought they'd found a way to stop the climate change that threatened to destroy the planet, and still be able to burn the fossil fuels they loved so much. They created a self-replicating particle that was supposed to regulate the atmosphere, control greenhouse gases, stop the rapid warming of the globe. The dancers and actors are frenetic now, tearing at their skin as if it burns, writhing in pantomimed agony that is both terrifying and beautiful. "The fools," Elder Knight shouts. "Selfish, short-sighted fools. They could have changed their lifestyles, destroyed their cars, let the good of the earth prevail over big businesses and their ravening hunger for money. But no, they wanted to have it all. They sent their particles into the atmosphere, but they had made a terrible error. They had interfered too much with the natural order of the planet, and she had enough. The entire Earth rebelled, destroying itself to save itself." The actors slow now, holding hands and looking lost as they wander through a wasteland. Most humans and animals were wiped out. The few survivors would have been doomed if not for the foresight of our hero, our founder, the creator of the Ecopanopticon, Aaron Albaz. The villagers go crazy, cheering and shouting and stomping their feet for a man long dead, for a man they believe to be their savior. The man who voluntarily destroyed human civilization. I wanted to tell them as soon as I got here. I was astonished they didn't know, that they still believed the myths and lies told inside Eden. They think Aaron Albaz is a savior. But really, he was a madman, an environmentalist and genius who made a unilateral decision to wipe out humanity for the good of the planet. He created a virus that killed all but a fraction of a percent of humans. More than 7 billion people dead in the span of a week. At the same time, he unleashed a program, the EcoPen Opticon, that took over every computer system in the world. EcoPen used computers and factories and the defense system, everything with a wire or a chip, to make an army of robots. EcoPen was tasked with two things: save the planet and preserve humans. EcoPen, logical as any machine, saved humans by imprisoning them in Eden. It implanted lenses in each survivor to monitor and even alter their thoughts. It made them think they were the lucky few, the chosen, when actually, they were the survivors of a mass murder. It kept them in prison and fed them lies so they wouldn't try to escape. It told them the Earth was destroyed, even though EcoPen managed to restore it after only a few generations. And for all the power it held over the survivors, for all the good an all-powerful program like EcoPen could do, it still allowed inequality and hate and poverty to thrive inside of Eden. It let humans be their old, horrible, selfish, short-sighted selves to each other, as long as they didn't harm the Earth. Its prime directive from its creator was to keep the species alive. It didn't care who suffered or died in the process. I hate that these people, these supposedly free people, believe that Aaron Albaz was a good man. As for EcoPen, I'm not sure how I feel. It's a machine, subject to the will of its creator. And yet it has grown to such an extent, makes its own decisions. I just don't know. I am grateful that it managed to save some of humanity, a million or so out of the billions that used to roam the planet. I'm grateful that I was set free to live in the natural world. But I resent EcoPen because it could do so much better. If we have to rely on our technology to survive, shouldn't that technology make the world truly a paradise? It would be nice if just once EcoPen would ask our opinion about the way it is running things, Yarrow says inside my head. She's a pain, but she makes me chuckle sometimes. Mom knows, too. She's the one who gave me Aaron Albaz's handwritten journal. When I talked to her about whether we should share our knowledge, she advised against it. We have no proof. The journal is still back in Eden somewhere. I have no idea where it might even be. It feels so wrong, though, hiding the truth from people. However upsetting it might be, however much it might shake the foundations of their faith, isn't it better that they have all the information? Then they can decide for themselves. Maybe they want to believe the lie. Maybe it's easier, but they should be free to choose. I've zoned out as the Wolfmoon pantomime continues. Now Elder Knight draws it to a close. Tomorrow, the newest members of our society, and the youth who have reached the age of 17, will prove themselves in the wilderness with a series of 3 tests. They must understand that we are no more nor less important than any other part of nature. Never forget that. We have our place here as much as a bacterium or an ant or a wolf. We evolved to fill a niche. Never believe yourself above any other living thing. And yet, don't let yourself be ashamed of your species either. We have made mistakes, but we fortunate few have learned from them. And our descendants will never forget the lessons we will teach. She throws back her head and utters an unearthly cry, like a wolf's howl, but higher pitched. All around me, the villagers imitate her in long ululations. The noise is overwhelming, and suddenly I can't take it anymore. I shove my way through the press and head for the quiet of home. As I turn away, though, Mom finally finds me.
Hey, you. I saw you across the crowd but didn't want to miss any of the ceremony. Come try the hazelnut cookies I made.
She grabs my hand, and I can't help but cry out. Her face becomes instantly serious, and she looks at my crooked fingers.
What happened? Did you slam them in a door? Let's get you to the healer. Maybe she can...
She notices my dirty, rumpled tunic,
peers more closely at my bloodshot eyes.
Rowan, sweetheart, what happened to you?
I shake my head,